Welcome to Magic Myths and Monsters, the podcast where we explore the fantastical world of fairy tales and folktales. I'm your host, Annalisa. I grew up hearing and reading folktales from around the world, and as I've aged, my appreciation of them has only grown. If you're also a lifelong lover of fairy tales, or even just casually interested in learning about the stories and what they reveal about the societies that produced them, then this is the podcast for you. So grab a beverage of your choice and get cozy as we travel to the worlds behind Once Upon a Time. Today we'll be discussing the myth of Medusa, learning about the origins and different iterations of the myth, and talking about the various interpretations of the story. First, let's go over the most commonly known version of the tale. Medusa was a beautiful young woman who caught the eye of Neptune. He lay with her in Minerva's temple, and, as punishment for the disrespect, Minerva turned Medusa's lovely hair into snakes and made it so that any who looked upon her directly would be turned to stone. Medusa became a famous monster, and the hero Perseus was sent to kill her. With gifts from the gods, most significantly a mirrored shield from Minerva, Perseus was able to slay Medusa without looking at her directly. Medusa was pregnant at the time by Neptune, and when she was beheaded, Pegasus, the winged horse, and Hryosor, a giant with a gold sword, sprang from her body. Perseus then took her head and saved his mother from an unwanted marriage by turning the king to stone before offering Medusa's head to Minerva. Minerva then added Medusa's head to her shield, and that's the end of the myth. You may have noticed that I was using the Roman names for the gods there, instead of their original Greek names, Poseidon and Athena. That's because the most famous and popular version of the originally Greek myth comes from Ovid, the most famous Roman poet, in his great narrative poem Metamorphoses, which was written in the year 8 AD. He took the Greek myth of Perseus killing Medusa and added his own spin on it. The myth, of course, predates Ovid. There are many ancient Greek accounts of the three Gorgons, of which Medusa is one. Just to make sure we're all on the same page, a gorgon is a term for a woman with snakes for hair and who turns people into stone if they look at her directly. There are a few different depictions of gorgons. Sometimes they are fully women with only snakes for hair, and that's what makes them not human. But in other interpretations, especially the more ancient Greek versions of gorgons, you see them depicted with snakes for hair and then top half human, lower half snake. So they're slithering around, no legs, just snake. The three Gorgons were sisters, though Medusa was the only mortal, which allowed Perseus to kill her. Bad luck for Medusa. The ancient Greek poet Hesiod, who probably lived between 750 and 650 BC, and was also a contemporary of Homer, who wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey, stated that the Gorgon sisters were the offspring of the sea god Phorcys and his sister, the sea goddess Ceto, and were monstrous from the start. Which is clearly a different origin story for Medusa than that of Ovid, who, if you remember, said that Medusa got those snake-like traits when Minerva cursed her, but here, she was just born that way. The Gorgons were originally described as purely monstrous, but around the 5th century BC, sculptors and painters began to depict them as beautiful in addition to terrifying, with poet Pindar describing Medusa as fair-cheeked in an ode written in 490 BC. Interestingly, even in ancient Greece, depictions of Medusa began to be more complex than just that of the slaying of a monster, and instead becoming a tragic story. The first of those iterations came from the painter Polygnotus, who lived during the 5th century BC, depicting a vastly tonally different version of the myth in Perseus and Medusa. In his painting, Perseus kills Medusa while she's sleeping, which is clearly not a heroic act. There is some debate over whether or not he was intending to mock Perseus, or paint Medusa as a more tragic figure, but nonetheless, Perseus killing Medusa in that version is not something that is being celebrated. Now that we've gone over a brief history of the myth, let's dig a little deeper and explore some interpretations. The various interpretations of the myth of Perseus and Medusa we'll go over range from the historical to the nihilistic. The first interpretation is that the myth is a metaphor for, or sublimated account of an actual attack. In this interpretation, the beheading of Medusa is read as the priestesses of shrines being stripped of the masks they wore as the shrines were overrun. Joseph Campbell, an American professor of comparative mythology, asserted that, quote, "There occurred in the early 13th century BC an actual historic rupture, a sort of sociological trauma, which has been registered in this myth, much as what Freud terms the latent content of a neurosis is registered in the manifest content of a dream. Registered, yet hidden. Registered in the unconscious, yet unknown or misconstrued by the conscious mind," end quote. Now, to me, this interpretation would be fascinating if it were true. However, I do have a hard time fully buying into it because it seems to draw heavily from psychoanalysis and from Freud's beliefs and practices, which I don't personally put a ton of stock into. And it doesn't seem to be grounded in actual historical accounts of any single attack. I couldn't find anything pointing to what attack might have originated this myth. And as Campbell says, this attack was supposedly just manifested subconsciously as a myth instead of being remembered as a real event. And I just have a hard time fully buying into that theory. Again, not a huge Freud girly. Which brings us to our next interpretation, an interpretation of the myth that comes directly from Freud himself. In a posthumously published essay, Freud equates decapitation with castration and reads the myth as a demonstration of the fear of castration after viewing something forbidden. In Freud's reading of the myth, he injects some Oedipus complex stuff because of course he does. Medusa is figuratively the mother in his reading, and Perseus is figuratively her son. The son experiences illicit desire when viewing his mother's genitals and becomes terrified of his father's retribution, i.e. castration. Now, to what is probably no one's surprise, I am not a huge fan of this interpretation. As stated before, I don't like Freud. I'm not a big fan, and I think that his psychoanalysis has been injected into literary criticism and interpretation for far too long. He has been given undue weight in interpreting stories and what they mean, in my mind. And this is just an example of him taking a myth and turning it into something that it wasn't. In Greek mythology, there is quite literally the story of Oedipus, but that's not this myth. And I'm not saying that that wasn't written elsewhere or couldn't be read into other stories, but to me, it doesn't fully map onto this one. And if you disagree with me and are a big fan of Freud, love that for you, not for me. Moving on. In a different interpretation of the myth, Neptune laying with Medusa is read as sexual assault. And then that leads to two different ways to understand Minerva's actions that follow. That she is participating in victim blaming with what she did to Medusa. Or that her giving Medusa snakes for hair and causing everyone who looks at her directly to turn to stone was a means of protecting her from future assaults. Now, to me, these interpretations do make sense. On some level, there is a long history in Greek mythology, and thus Roman mythology as well, of the gods just falling in love with beautiful people and imposing their will on them sexually. So that does track. You know, Zeus obviously is the biggest perpetrator of that, but I'm 0% surprised by this reading of Neptune as doing the same. As for the distinction between either victim blaming or protection, I understand both readings, but I personally like the interpretation of the snakes as protection. I do like that interpretation a little better. It just makes me happier. Victim blaming is gross. Athena used to be, or Minerva used to be my favorite goddess from that pantheon. Now it's Artemis, but she used to be my fave. And I would prefer to read her as protecting one of her disciples. In Ovid's retelling of the myth, Medusa was originally a priestess of Minerva or Athena. And I like to believe that Athena would have protected her priestess instead of blaming her for something that was not her fault. But then that is later complicated by Athena giving Perseus the mirrored shield. But in an ideal world, in my ideal world, that is what she would have done. That's just the one that makes me happier. And finally, the nihilistic understanding of the myth. It's pretty simple. In this understanding of the myth, avoiding looking at Medusa is avoiding the depressing reality that life and the universe are meaningless. Killing Medusa is a rejection of that truth and choosing escapism instead. Pretty straightforward, as I said. Do I put a ton of weight into it? No. I don't see why a beautiful woman who also has snakes for hair and turns people into stone necessarily means that life and the universe are meaningless, because there was meaning into why she was that way. It's either she was born that way because she had sea gods for parents, and in Greek and Roman mythology, that makes sense. The children of gods are sometimes fantastical creatures. Or she was made that way by Minerva/Athena, and there is still reason for that. It's not that everything is meaningless. Things happen for a reason. And so I just don't put a ton of weight into that theory. Personally, I do put the interpretations of reading Ovid's version of the story as Neptune assaulting Medusa and it either causing Minerva/Athena to victim blame or protect her. Though I didn't cover this. There is, of course, the interpretation that this is a myth, period. This was something that was meant to honor the gods and entertain and just be part of the wonderful world that is Greek mythology. And we shouldn't be reading too much more into that. Which also, not gonna lie, I do see some weight in. It's between those two for me. So those are my feelings on the different interpretations of the myth of Medusa and Perseus. If you disagree with me, all the power to you. Feel free to do some more research, see what else is out there. And regardless of the interpretation you choose to believe, Medusa has become an iconic figure in Western culture, definitely more so than Perseus, the man who killed her. She's become a symbol for female rage and power, and is even the famous logo of Versace. And that wraps up our exploration of this week's folktale. Thanks for joining me on that journey. If you want to read the full story yourself, or take a look at the sources for the discussion, check out the show notes in the description. Make sure to follow Magic Myths and Monsters on Instagram, and don't forget to subscribe. See you next week as we dive into a new mystical tale. And remember, just because someone has been villainized, it doesn't always mean they are actually a villain.